Good evening, honorable members. Good evening to the leadership of the department, led by the minister, and good evening to our staff in parliament. We are in this special, and good evening to our media. I see there's a media that has actually joined us. I'm informed, honorable members, that our meeting is going to be live in the parliamentary programs, and therefore I would request that when you are actually are making your input, you actually show your picture so that you can know who's speaking. May I welcome you, thank you really, because we had a meeting this morning and we then got an information that the minister would like to brief us on a matter that he considers very urgent, and thanks for all of you to agree to convene at this level at this time. And I would like just to give it back to our secretary to just confirm the attendance of members, honorable members in this meeting. If I can allow you, Ms. Matalamba, to do that now.
Thank you, Chair. In attendance, we have Dr. S.M. Lomo, Mr. Munyayi, Dr. P.P. Janji, Dr. Jacob, Ms. Kwahube, Ms. Wilson, Ms. Ishmael, Mr. Van Staden, Ms. Sugars, and Mr. Imam Sheikha. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ms. Matalamba. On my screen, I see DDG Anpan, Pillay, and Dr. Manzi. If I can be informed from the department who logged in. I also see the minister has logged in. I see his camera is on. And also, if I can just be appraised, who is leading, who is accompanying you, Honorable Minister?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. We have a small team, which is myself. There will be the Deputy Minister also with us, and then we'll have Dr. Pillay, Ms. Ngubane, and Dr. Manzi, who are going to be part of the team that's going to help us as we present through. I have to give an apology to from the Director General, because there is a meeting that's going on at this point, and that meeting is discussing precisely the issues which we are discussing. Unfortunately, it's been going on for a while, and it's a meeting of the various departments, and they are going through a process of consultation on a number of issues assigned by Cabinet. And so he's tendered his apology. We also don't intend that this would be a very long discussion. We just want to give you a sense of some of the issues. We'll get to that at the point you give us the time. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Okay. Yes, no, thank you very much, Honorable Minister. We welcome you, and we now note who else is accompanying you. Welcome, Deputy Minister. Welcome, Dr. Anban Pillay. Doctor, we also want to welcome the Chief of Staff, Ms. Ngumane. We will now bring it to you, Honorable Minister. We have convened this special portfolio committee meeting at your request. When you raised the issue with me telephonically that there's an urgent matter that you'd like to brief this portfolio committee about, and you indicated the urgency, and we have since then reconvened as the portfolio committee. I now give you this opportunity to then take us through the matter that you'd like to bring to our attention. Thank you, Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. May I also indicate our gratitude that you were able to join us at this meeting. Effectively, I'd love to share with you the fact that there is a consultative process that we have embarked upon. We have had a discussion at the National Health Council, which was yesterday. We are considering that the National Health Act regulations need to be updated for purposes of being able to assist us as we manage the pandemic going forward. We do believe that when these regulations are ready, at some point there will probably be one of our major ammunition to deal with the issue of the pandemic, and therefore it will be important for us to share our thinking with the portfolio committee. And then of course we still have to consult other departments, and we also have to table the matters at cabinet, and we will then out of that process have an understanding as to at which point it would be necessary to utilize the National Health Act regulations. Let me also say that the matter had to go through the department, the National Health Council. So all the provincial leaders have been consulted on the matter, and then various departments have to go through it. And of course, in the process, there's also going to be a lot of discussion with the state law advisor. And their initial indication was that they were comfortable with the proposed amendments, and we need to at least get the portfolio committee to comment on that, and it will help us as we go to cabinet and also consult other departments and thresh out the way forward. In particular, we believe that the nature of the COVID-19 came up and overwhelmed the country, as it has done in most of the countries, and therefore necessitated a huge response that immediately required a number of departments led by the president and various other stakeholders to participate. Ordinarily, if it was a manageable epidemic, it would have relied on the National Health Act to be able to deal with the various provisions that are necessary for containment of the infection. And so we believe that at a certain point, it will be more appropriate to utilize the National Health Act and the regulations for notifiable medical conditions, which would then allow us certain activities and restrictions to be able to contain that particular situation. So just to be able to take the members through, I'm going to ask that our members of the team assist us with that, and I do trust that the documentation was made available to the portfolio committee. From where I sit, you should be able to get a copy of the old regulations, and then of course look at some of the proposals, and we'll take the discussions from there. So that is really the basis for the consultation. We will then be opening up space for a cabinet discussion tomorrow so that as we move on, we have at least had a sense of what the portfolio committee would be suggesting, or the comments. We'll have the benefit of the comments from the portfolio committee. So I think just to shorten the process, I'm going to ask Ms. Ngubane to table and lead the presentation, and then we will come back and deal with the questions and answers in the process. Thank you very much. If it's acceptable to you, Chairperson, I'm going to request that we allow Ms. Ngubane to take us through.
Yeah, go ahead, Minister. Go ahead, Ms. Ngubane.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good evening to all Honorable Members. May I just request that we be allowed to share the screen? Yes, I've made you a co-host in the meeting. Thank you. As the minister has indicated, that we would like to just present to honourable members the what is basically being proposed by the department as the amendments to our current regulations. Chair, I would like to just share, and it's the document that you now have in your possession. I will just go through it so that we simplify it. These are the regulations, and they are known as the regulations relating to the surveillance and the control of notifiable medical conditions. These regulations are obviously done, are established from the National Health Act, and these regulations came into effect in December 2017. Now, firstly, these regulations, when we were faced with COVID as the country and the globe, we firstly confirmed as a department that the COVID-19 pandemic does actually fall under the notifiable medical conditions, because a schedule that actually lists some of them does mention the novel coronavirus. So we did basically locate it to this family. Now, I would like to just go to Regulation 12 of these very regulations. Regulation 12 now explains the process to firstly declare notifiable medical conditions. So we know that that has been, that box has been ticked. And then it says that the minister must actually take into account that this is a medical condition, one, that poses a public health risk to a population of a particular community, district, municipality, a province or country. So we know in this instance that indeed COVID-19 does also tick that box. Secondly,
that it may be regarded as a public health risk or has a potential for regional and international spread. Number two, that box is ticked because we know that COVID-19 has actually spread across the globe. And then thirdly, it says that it's a medical condition that may require, I emphasize, immediate, appropriate, and specific action to be taken by the national department, one or more provincial departments, or one or more municipalities. So in in these regulations as it stands, firstly, it emphasizes the urgency that such a public health risk must be treated with, that it does require immediate and appropriate and specific action. Now, the whole, if you just look at this whole document, it then, for example, speaks to areas like, if you look at, for example, Regulation 14, it speaks to a voluntary medical examination, prophylaxis, treatment, isolation, and quarantine. But what is interesting is that Regulation 15 then says, if a person is not willing to subject themselves voluntarily to being isolated or quarantined, then this can be done mandatory. And it says that basically it also explains the process that if a person refuses, they can actually be kept until a court order is obtained. The critical element about this is that it ensures that the department is able to contain or still implement measures to contain the spread of this virus. Now, I would like to just go to regulations that were repealed, because we need to explain why these amendments are now being proposed. In 2017, I've stopped sharing, and I would just like to share again another document with your permission. So whilst just opening it, I can go ahead, Chen, and speak to it. When in 2017, when these regulations came into effect, there had been old regulations that were in place, and they are almost similar to these ones, and they had been in place, and the last update, I think, was around 1987, Chair and Honourable Members. And it once again emphasises the issue of putting measures in place when there is a public health risk. If I can just share. So these are the regulations that the repealed regulations that we now make reference to. What is interesting in these regulations is that if you look at Regulation 2, it speaks to the prevention and restriction of and control of over-communicable diseases. Now, it's the same concept as the notifiable medical condition. And there, it is quite specific. It doesn't just limit itself to what is in the regulations that we've just gone through, specifically Regulation 12, subsection C, where it says the minister must actually take immediate action. Here, it goes further to say there can be an imposition of restrictions. And these restrictions, if you look here, Chair, at Regulation 2, subsection 1, it then sets out basically that there can be a closure of teaching institutions, places of public entertainment, or a place used for public receptions, recreation, or amusement that is situated within a district or any part of such an institutional place. It also talks about regulating the attendance by any person to an institution, and also regulating and restricting or prohibiting the holding of an off or attendance at any meeting, reception, or other public gathering, and also placing under quarantine. Now, you would see here Chair and honorable members, that these regulations get into the detail basically of the kind of restrictions that can then be imposed as part of the measures to contain the spread of a notifiable medical condition. Now, when we then went back to health, just to try and understand why these were actually removed or excluded when there was this process, it was quite interesting because it just looked like a pure oversight. And in fact, there was even a feeling that it may be the one sub-regulation was trying to summarize all these regulations. And even, you know, NICD being an entity that we know is responsible for actually looking into, you know, communicable diseases, actually said this was clearly an oversight because this is normal practice. When you are basically trying to deal with a public health risk, a notifiable medical condition, you need to ensure that you have got sufficient measures in place that you can implement to control the spread. Now, we then said, well, let us look at putting together a proposal that can actually spell out those restrictions that we would like to propose. It's basically a proposal which provisions which empower the department to explore the option of putting in place restrictions. Now, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I'd just like to open the proposed restrictions now. I mean, the proposed amendments. The proposed amendments are very brief, and it's a document that honorable members would have received as well. So basically, these are the proposed amendments, and it's 4 pages. And I would just, I'll quickly take through our members so that there's an understanding. So what has been added here, which, for example, is not in the current regulations, it's just the definition of gatherings. So we've basically defined gatherings as we know it under existing legislation, and it's been put there. And then the second definition that's been included relates to the point of entry. And that definition has been taken directly from the international health regulations by the WHO. Then we have also introduced, proposed this new regulation that principles, because we want to ensure that there is cooperation, there is coordination of activities, and there is consultation with the relevant or competent national departments, the provincial governments and local government that would be affected, or even international body. And obviously we've learned and we've seen the significant role that has been played right now by the WHO, for example, in guiding us as a country, as a continent, and as a globe in basically how we manage and respond to COVID-19. The next proposed amendment is this one, where we say that the minister may, by notice in the Government Gazette, publish further regulations to address, prevent, and combat the spread of the notifiable medical condition. Chair, I'll just pause to explain this part because it's quite critical. What we are saying is that we understand that, firstly, when you are considering imposing restrictions, they have implications, they may have implications on rights of individuals, including constitutional rights of individuals or citizens. Therefore, you want to make sure that these are published and they are done through a form of regulations, and those are considered by the public. The public is sensitized to say that it's part of responding to the pandemic or to the notifiable medical condition. This is basically the restrictions that are being proposed. So it allows for that process. So outside of the actual notifiable medical condition regulations, we are saying you must still establish or introduce further restrictions or regulations where you will now detail the restrictions that you are considering imposing. And Chair, I must highlight, it's not just issues of restrictions saying, no, people must basically go home at this time, or, you know, you can do so much, etc. But it even speaks to the health protocols that can be determined as critical at that time as part of the response to the virus. So, for example, in this instance, we know that the washing of hands, the wearing of masks, you know, keeping a distance has been critical, has played a role, and we would still want it to continue remaining. And so those issues, you are able to communicate them to the public through these further regulations so that all citizens are aware that as part of managing the public risk, they must still adhere to these regulations. Then if we move to the next proposed amendment, subsection 6 here, we say the minister may, to ensure all necessary and reasonable measures are put in place to manage and control the spread of the NMC by regulation in the Government Gazette, impose and necessary restrictions relating to such a notifiable medical condition. Then we say that some of these restrictions, there is an acknowledgement, like we've already mentioned, that there has to be an exercise of... Can I proceed, Chair?
Yes, proceed. May I request, Honourable Imam Sheikh, please to mute your phone, and any other person who actually might have his phone not muted also to join this. I've been noticing Honorable Sheikh's phone and his gadget is not muted.
Thank you, Chair. So here we basically, it goes back to just emphasizing the point that relates to the intergovernmental relations principles of consultation, cooperation, and working together to ensure alignment, especially when you deal with, because the issue is that with the notifiable medical conditions, they don't just become a health problem. And we know right now, for example, with COVID-19, that it's a national problem. It impacts on all sectors. It impacts on all departments. And there needs to be that coordination at all levels. And so we say here that the regulations must be published in consultation with the minister whose portfolio is affected by such restrictions. And then what we have done, honorable members will recall the repealed regulations that I just shared on the screen, that they basically contained exactly this: the complete or partial closing of any public place, including a place used for public reception, etc., and the prohibition and attendance of a gathering, and the prohibition or regulating the inter-district or provincial movement of persons, the prohibition or regulating the movement of persons at points of entry, the regulating specified hours requiring persons to remain indoors, and the complete and partial closure of educational institutions. Now, honorable members will take note that this clearly comes from those regulations, the repealed regulations, but it is silently also, I want to submit, Chair, that it is silently couched under the current regulations, where it says the minister must take immediate action to implement measures to respond to the public health risk. So these are basically the proposed regulations that we have put forth as the health department. And our view is that this does not only respond just to basically COVID-19, but it says if tomorrow there is another medical condition which falls under the notifiable medical conditions, you would still need provisions that deal, you know, with such matters, including the adherence to specific health protocols, but furthermore, to look at restrictions that you may need to implement in order to ensure that there is containment of the spread of such a notifiable medical condition. Now, the minister has indicated that we have engaged the state law advisor, and we've basically consulted, you know, internally, including provinces. And one of the conversations that was had is that the provision that says the, you know, the relevant ministers or the relevant or competent government must be consulted then allows for a situation where if a department or a sector is not able to impose certain restrictions, but they deem them as critical. To give an example, if, for example, tomorrow, let's say, as it stands right now, under the level one regulations, we know that the restrictions, for example, which are under the Disaster Management Act, the restrictions in terms of gatherings, it says that for outdoors, they are limited to 500, and for indoors, they are limited to 250. Now, the question arises that if you don't have, for example, these level one regulations, how can you then effect, you know, basically put into effect these such restrictions? So it means any individual or organization can wake up and say, let's fill up the stadium, we're going to have a concert or a soccer match, because you don't have any legal instrument that then allows you to restrict such as part of your containment measures. So this is basically the intention of these proposed amendments. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Usho ukuthi njena ngamanye amazwi uzoqinisa idolo umnyango wezempilo ezweni thukwazi ukuthi uthatha amandla uphathe. No, thank you very much, Minister. We just wanted to check because it is not normal that you consult and get our contribution on regulations. We do come in and be part of the lawmaking, but once that is done, the regulations become your responsibility. But this time around, you felt you needed to consult with us. We appreciate that, but maybe you'll give us your insight as to what actually was your thinking in that regard. You also will have to indicate how much we can begin to share this widely. I noted your opening remarks that you are still consulting various institutions and agencies and government structures, and therefore you will have to guide us as to after this meeting how much do we take this as a like a public document for now. May I then recognize members, please raise your hands if you would want to get clarity seeking comments. I'm watching the space there. I have noticed Honorable Van Staden is number one. His hand is already up. Any other takers from the honorable members? Honorable Jacobs, you are number two. Honorable Kwahube, you are number three. By the way, Honorable Kela has also joined in. She was not recognized there. And Honorable Chirwa, you are number four. Who else is
Sheikh Imam?
Okay. Honorable Sheikh Imam, you are number that. Honorable Tanti, you follow. Honorable Kela, you follow. Honorable Sukers, you follow. In that order, starting with Honorable Van Staden, Honorable Jacobs, Honorable Kwahube, Honorable Naledi, Honorable Pumza, Pumza Tanji, Honorable Kela, Honorable Imam, and then Kela, Honorable, did I raise Naledi? Okay, I'll come back again. But Naledi comes after Kwahube, yeah. Start Van Staden.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good evening, members and Honorable Minister and members from the Department. It's a long time we have not speaking to each other. Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, it seems to me that these new proposed regulations and proposed amendments is for me, and I think for many South Africans who's watching tonight, I think it's no difference from what we have under the current Disaster Management Act regulations. And it seems like it's just giving the Honorable Minister of Health and the Department of Health more power to force lockdowns without the use of the Disaster Management Act and under and other sections of the Constitution. Now, Honorable Chair, if you will allow me, a top official of the World Health Organization issued a statement this past weekend where he called upon world leaders to stop with lockdowns and restrictions in the fight against COVID-19. This doctor, who's by my name Dr. Nabarro, said that the members in the World Health Organization do not agree with these methods to control the coronavirus. Now, you only win time to get your health services in order and in place to recognize, reorganize, and to protect your healthcare workers, but it must actually not be done, is the opinion of this member of the World Health Organization. According to them, it increases poverty, malnutrition increase, and it's a horrible, horrible catastrophe which is currently happening around the world in and our own country as well. People are getting poorer, and the University of Edinburgh is also of a point of view that lockdowns have caused more COVID-19 deaths than COVID-19 itself. Herd immunity must be developed, and with a constant lockdown, this development can never happen. Now, we have currently a 90% recovery rate in South Africa, and lockdowns, in my opinion, and the opinion of many South Africans, will have no use anymore, but just to destroy South Africa completely. I think we need a smarter control and management of this COVID-19 pandemic, and we need like the wearing of face masks, social distancing, and sanitizing of hands. And I think we must improve the testing in our communities. And if this was done from the start, I think we wouldn't have to be gone through a harsh lockdown for several of months now. We must hunt down this virus instead of trying to keep everybody away from it. And what is working in for other countries is not necessarily going to work for us. And we have seen what damage was done to the people, the elderly, the children, and the economy of this country. And we dare not to go back to lockdown of any kind, because this, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Minister, will destroy South Africa completely, and it will lead to civil, and I'm warning you tonight, and you can mark my words, it will lead to civil unrest across all communities in this country if we're going to another lockdown. Civil society, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Minister, have lost trust in and confidence in this government already under level 4 of this lockdown. We need to start listening to our scientists, medical experts, and other experts for advice, and we dare not to be scared of this virus. We dare not to chase people in their homes again for several months at a time. We can simply not afford it in this country. The world cannot afford it. Chief, please, and Honourable Minister, please, these amendments of this Act and these regulations, and I'm very honest about this, it's just another way to not to use the Disaster Management Act, to go to the South Africa and say, listen, we are going out of the Disaster Management Act, we're going out of these lockdowns, but this power which will be given to the Honourable Minister and his department by these regulations will be a catastrophe which we are going to face in the future, and we will be very sorry about this. Honourable Minister, I hope you take what I'm saying with all your heart, and that I'm saying it in the goodwill of all the people of South Africa. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Honourable Van Staden, thank you. I thought you were going to end with as a brief talk. But anyway,
I can do it, yeah. As a brief talk, Minister, luister naar die mensen van Zuid-Afrika. Dank je, Chippers.
The order now is the following. Note, Honourable Member, so that I don't come in between. After this, it will be Honourable Jacobs. Number three will be Honourable Kwakhube. After Kwakhube will be Honourable Chirwa. Number five will be Honourable Imam Sheikh. After Imam Sheikh will be Honourable Janji. After Honourable Janji, Honourable Kela. After Kela, Honourable Sukers. And the last hand I've recognized is Honourable Wilson. Any other member that I've left out who would want to speak? Okay. One after the other. Start, Honourable Jacobs. Thank you.
Agbare minister, baie dankie dat julle hierdie reëls toegepas het aan die begin van die verspreiding van hierdie virus binne in ons land. Good evening everyone, good evening minister, good evening members, good evening the members of the National Department of Health. Thank you very much minister, and also the department, and also the National Coronavirus Command Council for the good work that you have done to have saved South Africa from a catastrophe. As a medically trained person and as a scientist, I would like to actually say to Van Staden, Honourable Van Staden, I am not certain where he gets his science from. We need to be very careful what we say on national television and what we quote on national television. It is very imperative that we really look at what our scientists were saying within South Africa. Bringing that into relation with what we are talking about tonight is the fact that these regulations were there in the first place. When we talk about notifiable medical diseases, it means the intention is to curb any spread of anything else or a pathogen or a harmful agent that will cause harm to communities, harm to people, harm to South Africans and all of those who are within the boundaries of our country. So we realized from the presentation that there is a section that was a miss, and in it being a miss, we needed to correct it, and we should really be mindful and thankful that it was picked up, and it is that the minister has had felt that he should come and raise it with us at the portfolio committee. So I am expressing my gratitude, and I'm certain the gratitude of the African National Congress here, that we have the opportunity to engage with this and also to see what are those regulations which we are attending to put in place. Especially when looks at the words being used, that necessary and reasonable measures will be put in place so that certain restrictions which are mentioned there, as a number of restrictions which were initially within the Act. And we must remember that this is an Act that comes from 1977, which was then called the Health Act, which was updated in 1987 and then subsequently was reviewed and promulgated as the National Health Act in 2003 and then was again reviewed in 2017, and that putting back that paragraph especially is very essential to us and to our country and to our people. It is also important, if we look at the repealed regulations being brought back, the words used there are so that the minister may take immediate actions to respond to the notifiable medical condition. We are also aware that any notifiable medical condition can happen in the future. It could be in the near future, it could be in the later future, and therefore we need to be prepared for such an event. The world was not prepared for this event. Now there is this intention and the goodwill to understand that we need to be prepared for any necessary interventions which we need to take. So we support these measures. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good evening, colleagues, and good evening to the Minister and his team. Thank you very much for the presentation that we've been given. I do have a number of clarity-seeking questions. I am aware that obviously the passing of regulations that are attached to legislation is at the discretion of the minister, while the bulk of the legislation itself is the duty and the role of the members of parliament. But I do want to ask a really simple question as to, you know, this was deemed a very urgent meeting of the portfolio committee today. And perhaps the minister can shed light as to the urgency that is needed for us to consider these regulations this evening, tonight, 2 days before the National Disaster Management Act disaster is meant to be extended or ended on Thursday. I do want to just understand whether or not, you know, we are required to do this work this evening. Is it something that is urgent, and why the urgency? Then I think Ms. Ngubane went through some great detail about the history of the notifiable medical conditions and why we need regulations that pertain to that. And I tend to agree that the regulations that were attached to the National Health Act, as they stand, don't necessarily define certain issues quite well, and don't necessarily give clarity in some instances. But I do want to raise some grave concerns, colleagues, particularly when we're looking at the new regulations, Regulation 12.2, where it talks about how the minister may declare a medical condition as a notifiable in his or her opinion. The medical condition, it must have these three aspects which go around posing a public health risk, regarded as a risk, and may require appropriate and specific action taken by the national department. And the minister may also essentially publish a national government gazette to impose certain restrictions in aid of restricting the spread of this notifiable disease. Now, I do want to, Ms. Ngubane did touch on this, and I think it's not a throwaway comment that we need to make, Minister and your team, that we saw many unintended consequences during the last 7 months during COVID-19 and the lockdown. We saw, you know, inconsistencies in the application of regulations across departments, even though COCTA was mostly in charge of the regulations pertaining to the National Disaster Management Act, but we saw inconsistencies. So it's welcome that there is provisions that talk about cooperation and coordination between departments. But I think it would be amiss of us to think that it is simply a throwaway comment to say that these regulations don't have far-reaching consequences, which can impact on the civil liberties of our citizens. And as they stand, and it's not to say that the minister may not, with the urgency that is needed, declare a notifiable medical condition that requires urgent action. But we cannot have a situation where we've got legislation that allows any given sitting member of the executive to have unvetted powers to be able to simply, by the publishing of a government gazette, essentially implement wide-ranging prohibitions. I think that Minister and your team, we've got to rethink that, because one of the things that was raised about the National Disaster Management Act is around the constitutionality and around the times that it took where people were not able to make input. Of course, these decisions are often made with the urgency that they require. But to build these in an existing piece of legislation as almost as a normal course of action is something that I don't think is wise. I think that without the necessary checks and balances, and perhaps it's a matter of drafting, Minister, and perhaps it's a matter of the fact that the regulation as it stands is drafted too broadly. I mean, I think that one of the things we've always got to make sure is that as members of parliament, we raise issues where we cannot effectively hold the executive to account. And I'm just worried that particularly under the Regulation 12, where there is seemingly no other input except the opinion of the minister, where this can simply be declared as such, and prohibitions can be put in place. So that is my concern. I'm not opposed to tightening up the regulations pertaining to this. I think that it is important, and as Honourable Jacobs has said, this is not COVID-19 is probably not the only crisis or global health crisis we will face, and so we need to tighten these things. But we have to be so careful in the way in which we draft laws that only amass power on members of the executive and give no powers at all for oversight roles to happen. Because, you know, we don't make laws, Minister, simply by the sitting member of the executive. We make laws that are rational. And so we've got to think about that and think about that carefully. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to the Minister and the National Department of Health Representatives present in this meeting, and greetings to my colleagues as well and the Portfolio Committee of Health. I think it's important to take note of the lack of political will to having addressed this in a manner that could have been very efficient and effective from the get-go, which also renders this process as quite futile, really, and just a procedural process that has been going on, because we've made many recommendations. Yes, Chairperson.
Are you able to switch on your camera?
My network is really bad. That's why I switched off my camera.
Okay, all right.
Thank you, Chairperson. This process is rather disingenuous in the sense that we have made numerous recommendations to the minister, which he has responded to either too late or never responded to begin with. For instance, when we proposed that there must be regional-based information centers. The National Department of Health only responded to that recommendation 3 months after it was made. And secondly, it is also disingenuous to behave or pretend that it was impossible to have political will to have prevented us from getting to the levels that we did in terms of handling the coronavirus impact. There have been countries, there are countries at large, even African countries at that, that have worked towards prioritizing prevention. One of them is Rwanda. The other ones are Australia, Barbados, Bhutan, Bhutan, Burkina Faso, Cambodia, Dominica, Fiji, and the list goes on and forth. And there's a disingenuousness from the Department of Health in how they've handled the pandemic of coronavirus and how they've responded to the pandemic of coronavirus. Another issue is that we also requested for race demographics because currently as a country, we have an incomplete picture of what the coronavirus pandemic looks like in our country. I remember KZN before they came and we had to postpone their meeting because the MEC was unavailable on the day. And their presentation that included race demographics, Minister of Health. Because it is important, you can't say you prioritize prevention and primary health care as a primary objective of the National Department of Health, but preserve such information, which is readily available. And some of the reasons were that the information was not gathered, which was also completely disingenuous, and if I may say, a deep lie, because by virtue of going to a hospital, the demographics are collected, and that even to date, those demographics are not made available to the public, and we don't know the exact picture of what the pandemic looks like for the majority of Africans and who are affected most. Knowing of the inequality levels that we have, knowing of the remuneration inequality and wage gap we have between race and gender and class, and all of those issues, and how it affects our response. And how we are affected by pandemics. And this is a mistake that you made even during the AIDS pandemic or the HIV and AIDS epidemic at the time, to a point where civil organizations had to even organize amongst themselves for such information that we are brought to this point once again in 2020 to demand information that works in favor of the National Department of Health is another red flag that we should pay very close attention to. And also there's been very poor coordination in leading of provinces, in management, especially in the Department of Finances. Gauteng, Mpumalanga and the Eastern Cape have raised severe concern over how this pandemic was handled in terms of human resource and the finances of the provinces. And again, a recommendation was given to the minister that put the Eastern Cape under management, or I fail to remember the correct term, but to put it under administration, yes. And even the response of the National Department of Health in that regard was actually quite negative. That is why I find this process of having an urgent meeting when we do recommendations of the Portfolio Committee of Health, when we do engage on matters as the Portfolio Committee of Health with the National Department of Health, our recommendations are not taking the path of life. And this then puts us in a position where we watch something unfold, even though we have predicted what could be the possible outcome. Has the National Department of Health intended to put proper intervention strategies from the very beginning? We wouldn't be where we are today as a country, expecting second waves and having lost as many lives as we did. But the minister, and I would like to reiterate the point made by Honorable Sidwe Kwakhubo, and the fact that you are law unto yourself. And you don't take recommendations of the Portfolio Committee of Health quite seriously. And that is, I think, a very important thing to raise, because you come in here week in and week out, month in and month out, and do not take the deliberations we make in this Portfolio Committee of Health quite seriously until a point where it is tipping over already. And there's many other instances that I can mention, but will not do so in this particular sitting. But I do want to raise the issue that if indeed prevention is a priority of how you respond and how you draft your regulations and how you intend to implement the National Disaster Act, then the demographics, including race, gender, and even sexual orientation should be of primal consideration and should be some information that's given to the public, because that data is very important in devising how we strategize towards
implementing prevention strategies. For instance, you cannot implement prevention strategies for OR Tambo how you would for North Taxi Rank. It does not work like that. To date, we do not know how to coordinate or to do contact tracing in a taxi. And this is something that was raised before the first case of coronavirus was reported, to say how do we then coordinate contact tracing and prevention in townships, in rural areas, because what we have is for big entry points like the airports. And to date, there hasn't been a strategy devised by the National Department of Health to respond to such nuances that we have in the country, especially because we are one of the highest countries with a level of inequality, and especially unemployment, right? And we haven't had a political will that was enacted and provided by the minister himself and the National Department of Health, even during when some instances, issues of corruption, issues of nepotism and all those things came to the fore. The National Department of Health has failed, in actual fact, to prioritize the issue of prevention and primary health care during this pandemic, which was an opportunity at large to ensure that that objective, the primary objective of the Ministry of Health, did not perform to its utmost ability, which is why I find even this meeting to be quite regressive, because you're not coming here to find out what we think, Minister. You're just following procedure that you have to come and give us a presentation. But we will deliberate, we'll give you recommendations, and as usual, we'll go back to your office and do as you please. And I think it's very important that we raise this in this portfolio committee meeting, that we can't always come into meetings, deliberate, send recommendations, write opinion pieces, send questions, and the minister does not take those things seriously. Thank you, Chairperson.
Please, I had indicated that Sheikh Imam should follow, and after Sheikh is Honorable Chanji. Please follow without me coming in between.
Thank you very much, Sheikh. Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for that opportunity, and thank you very much for that presentation. My interpretation and understanding of what we see before us here is perhaps in anticipation of doing away with the national state of disaster. And what I think we are intending to do here is to give more powers to the minister so that should the need arise in particular areas at district level or local areas, that he might be able to impose strict regulations in terms of that. But remember, in the very beginning, and it was agreed, despite the fact that the National Command Council ignored that, that the phasing in will be done through a district model to ensure where the hotspots were and the infection rate were higher. Those may remain at that level at that stage, at a higher level, and the others would have been eased, but that clearly has not paid. So I'm not sure that with the added powers that might be given to the minister right now, particularly if a particular area in a local authority or at a district or provincial level, I'm not sure in practice how it is going to work, because the argument that seems to have come about that it was not effective because of inter-provincial, inter-district and challenges that they would have faced. Now, it is clear that the old regulation does not gives enough power, particularly to the ministers and things, and in this case, the Minister of Health, to be able to deal with these challenges should they arise. So I don't have a problem in terms of that. What I have a problem with, how would you now effect that if you were not able to effect it, even though it was agreed that we'll follow the district model and our provincial model, in particular in terms of now, the other very important thing is that the executive government ignored. The Command Council took the decisions with no real, not even accepting any recommendations that were made by the other spheres of government or structures at all. And for that reason, you'd be able to see that many of these regulations have been very ineffective. In fact, let me tell you, the level of compliance has been so low no measures were put in place whatsoever to deal with those things. However, the dangers persisted and right up to today, so even being on level one, it's a wasted exercise because there is no compliance. My problem is this, that there is no oversight mechanism, particularly for members of parliament and things, to hold the executive to account, and particularly this command council, because it seems to have become an authority on its own. And however, if it means that by accepting these amendments, we will now do away with the national state of disaster, and that should it be necessary, the minister will be able to impose strict regulations in certain areas where it might end up being hotspots or the infection rate would be higher, then I think we can support that. You know, I want to give a good example of the ineffectiveness of some of the regulations. You say the children must travel in taxis, in a full taxi, but they must go to the schools and they must go and socially distance themselves. So really, you know, some of these things were very laughable. If you look at what has been happening on the plane as well, was exactly the same. We expected the law enforcement to know and understand nothing about law, about these issues, particularly in terms of the thing. And I think on that. My only fear here is that so much of power, and the minister, current minister, will probably be gone and be part of another portfolio, or may not be here. And with so much of power being vested in one person, in the minister, and in this case, the Minister of Health, and I see that at the moment, these regulations fall under, to a very large extent, even with Minister of COCTA having a role to play. Now it's going to be under the minister. My fear is this, by virtue of no engagement with other authorities, including members of parliament and things, is it not a danger area that we are now treading on? However, if the intention is to move away from this national state of disaster and deal with it, if there is a pandemic, particularly in a hotspot in a certain area, then I think we are moving in the right direction. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. You will forgive me because I'm in a place where you remember even during the day I was complaining about the network. So I'll try and hide my video so that I shouldn't disturb the little network that I have. First of all, let me join the honorable members in appreciating the presentation. And also thank the minister and the department for the sterling job that the country has done during these trying times. Surely, Chairperson, when you look at the amendments and look at what was repealed before, one can clearly say this was an oversight, surely, because if you look at what has been happening during these when these regulations were came out, you would see that most of the issues that were supposed to be dealt with by the Department of Health were dealt with by other departments. But what is pleasing in this presentation is that it is stressed that there will be collaboration with other affected departments. And that is really pleasing. I think you've done a sterling job. We wouldn't have been at 90% recovery rate if this country did not do what it did. I am rising, Chairperson, to support the amendments to these regulations. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Geller, followed by Sukers, and then Honorable Wilson will be followed by Honorable Munyai.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also join my colleagues by welcoming the presentation. And also thank the minister for calling us as portfolio members. for this regulation. Indeed, Minister, you are very transparent. Hence, you have called us, and we really appreciate the good work that you are doing for the people of South Africa with your team, the health department. COVID-19 has taught us a lot, and we have seen that there were a lot of gaps. We know that from previously, under apartheid era, we were not taken serious. If you check, the conditions of a health facility are not the same. But as ruling party, we have tried to make sure that we manage to correct the mistakes of the past. And really, we are also going to correct and make sure that people of South Africa, they have the same standard in hospitals, even in clinics. So I'm saying, Minister, we have done a good job by amending these regulations. I know that you were not part in 2017. We just came in 2019. But you have looked the gaps that are in the regulation, and we are correcting it. I'm saying that, Chairperson, we really appreciate the good work that the minister is doing. And the minister is informing us as members always if there's something. Even the issue of COVID-19 is always reporting to the public, reporting in the media where we are spending as a country. And really, even other countries are appreciating the good work that South Africa is doing. Really, I'm very happy, and really, I'm saying keep it up to do the good work. I know that even other people, they don't see the good work that they are doing. That is the duty of EFF, Chair, the opposition part, to not see the positive things that are happening. But we are here to make sure that we save our country, we save people of South Africa, because really, we have learned a lot during the COVID-19. But you have sent them, Minister, with your deputy to make sure that we correct the mistake, and also we close the gap that are there in the public health system. So I'm saying, Chairperson, I support the amendment regulation. I'm saying forward with our minister. We are behind you. We are supporting you. We are supporting the Department of Health. We know that this is a difficult time, and you are there at the forefront to make sure that you respond to all challenges that are happening. Accept to be criticized, Minister. Kutwa kwau sedenza abantu abayiboni lonto. Kutwa gaspegi waikapa umolatu. Why Lisa Umolatu, but just concentrate in your work, because really we have seen even the recovery as a South Africa that you have done a good job for the people of South Africa. I'm saying well done, keep it up with the good work. Just ignore the criticisms from other people, but really we really appreciate what you have done for the country and show the love of our people of South Africa. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Sukers, Honorable Wilson, and the last Honorable Munyai.
Honorable Chair, I also need to ask your permission to just keep my video off. I'm in a place where the internet is not very good.
Agreed.
I cannot believe that we are sitting here listening to these proposals that are being put before this portfolio committee. And I want to join my two colleagues that have said that this is a tick box exercise that again undermines the oversight function that in the last 6 months in this whole parliament has been lacking. We have been through the mole of doing oversight minimally when it comes to legislation. There is no way that we can support further restrictions that undermines the constitutional democracy that we live in South Africa. This government has lost all credibility and trust with the people of South Africa. Sitting here and listening to this, I want to join the concern of people that are saying that these restrictions are going to be met by resistance by a large portion of our people. We, South Africa, has a recovery rate not because of the government success, because of the men and women that slaves away in our hospitals under very difficult circumstances. There are doctors and nurses that has worked at the forefront of this pandemic, and people have died, not of COVID-19 as much as they've died of other diseases related to the fact that many elderly people were left without anyone being able to visit them in hospitals. I have in my constituency and in my family examples of people who died because they couldn't see their family while they were taken up in hospital. So let us not fool ourselves to say that it is because of government. It is not because of government. That is the whole of South Africa. The whole nation has gone through 6 months of difficulty. And we cannot undermine that. It is not because of restrictions or regulations. If you walk into any of our communities, there is no COVID-19 pandemic regulation that is being adhered to. Nothing. So we cannot use this as an example of that. I am very concerned, and we are very concerned, about the restrictions that is being proposed here tonight, because it is it actually makes an abnormal situation now for a longer period of time, and giving the state powers through the minister to exercise powers beyond what is given in the constitution. A national state of emergency is an exceptional event warranting the exercise of extraordinary powers which are circumscribed by the relevant act and which has a time limit. The powers contemplated in these regulations are in fact emergency powers, but without being of limited duration, it would create an indefinite state of effective emergency at the discretion of the minister. How can we receive these things, Chair, these documents this afternoon, to sit in a meeting, an emergency meeting tonight, and we now need to give support to this? This needs to be debated at a full house of Parliament. It needs to go back to Parliament. These proposals cannot be given to us in an emergency call in the afternoon, and we need to now respond effectively to something that really takes us further into an abnormal situation. We cannot undermine the abnormality in which we are. We are actually sustaining it through these restrictions. And we are asking more people to give up their civil liberty under a government that has not performed at all or given, laat ek dit in Afrikaans sê, wat die vertroue van die mense verloor het. Hoe moet ons die minister vertrou? We have corruption to the highest levels. We need to sit here and we need to, ons moet saamstem with restrictions that are going to be applied by the minister unilaterally on the South African nation. Sommige net so. En ons moet vergeet van die breek van vertroue wat gebeur het. We cannot do that, Chair. I want to ask this committee, please, to please ask of the minister to take this to Parliament. This needs to be debated by the full House of Parliament, and we cannot now as a committee sit here and we need to do the gumbaya for restrictions in the name of COVID-19. We don't just have COVID-19, Minister. We have HIV/AIDS. We have many other diseases that, and we have a pandemic of violence against women and children. There are many things. So under each of those things, the Minister of Health can now come and put a restriction on civil liberty, because the medical conditions are not defined beyond COVID-19. South Africa has enough pandemics. We cannot do this. This is undermining the oversight of Parliament. It's undermining, and we cannot, and it's unacceptable, actually, to do this proposal and in the manner in which it is being done. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Minister, I think what is very, very apparent here is that you are now going to use the National Health Act to circumvent the disaster management act. And I think that in itself raises concerns. You are a member of the cabinet. You know exactly where we stand in terms of the Disaster Management Act. And I think what you're trying to tell us is that the National Disaster Management Act is now actually going to come to an end. But I do have serious concerns, Minister. First of all, number one, that we have no legal opinion on this, and we know that these regulations, before we approached this discussion this evening, were very thin on the ground, very, very badly written, and are just so wide in scope that it's actually quite scary. We have raised this on several occasions, that executive powers are very dicey at the best of times, and that, you know, we have concerns of that. I really believe that we are in a situation in a democratic South Africa that there now needs to be some kind of participation at all spheres of government, including Honourable Sukers mentioned, that this is something that needs to be discussed in the House. We cannot step on civil liberties, Minister. We just cannot. And one of my concerns is we are 6 months down the line into COVID. And from the outset, it was made very, very, very clear, not just here, but in the world all over, that COVID-19 is not going to go away anytime soon. We're 6 months into this pandemic. We've made the turnaround. The people of South Africa came out, they were supportive, they did everything in their power to make sure that they obeyed the rules, the regulations, so that we could hopefully have prevented a second surge. Fortunately, at the moment, that's not looking too bad. But it wasn't the government, Minister, and it wasn't you who made the situation in terms of dealing with this pandemic strong. It was actually the people of South Africa. But knowing that this was 6 months down the line, that we're 6 months down the line, and knowing from the outset that this pandemic could be here for many, this COVID disease, not the pandemic, could be here for many years. People are aware of that. It was common knowledge. My question then is, why are we discussing this now? If this was a concern, and if this government and new minister were looking ahead, planning ahead how we were going to deal with this, why all of a sudden, 2 days before the Disaster Management Act is due to, what we're presuming by this meeting, is going to fall away, why are we only discussing this now? Why are we doing it under duress? Why are we doing it as an emergency meeting 2 days before this is all due to happen? It is very, very concerning. And I have a severe problem with the executive being given so much power. I think what also became very, very apparent, Minister, and perhaps this is why you're trying to do it. Is this a face-saving exercise? What became very, very, very apparent during this pandemic, particularly in the early days, is that our provincial departments of health were in total disarray. Total disarray. The situation that arose in the Eastern Cape and several other provinces, with people being treated in underground barrages with pieces of canvas put around, showed us very, very clearly that the Department of Health is shambolic, that it is not equipped, that it is not ready, that it's understaffed, that it's short of facilities, it's short of all the things that we need for a proper health system in this country. And yet you are now wanting us to support this proposal in a situation which is not going to help people anyway. Those are my concerns, Minister, and I really, really have a concern that, number one, we don't have a legal opinion here. Number two, I think this needs to be discussed at a wider level, and possibly that, you know, we need to have some kind of debate in Parliament with regards to this. I have a concern that this is being rushed through, and that's always questionable. We know that the regulations that you are discussing now are already sitting on the ground and very badly written, and I think that needs to be addressed properly before we even consider this. And with all of that in mind, I cannot see us supporting this.
Last hand, Honourable Munyai.
Thank Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think as the African National Congress, a governing party and a responsible party, will really consider this proposal from the minister, which will be really helpful to our country and to our people. So therefore, Honorable Chair, I'm supporting this proposal 100%, so that it must be done as a matter of urgency, because you never know when the unprecedented novel coronavirus family may really hit our country. So we don't have to. In fact, it is better when regulations such as this one, it is within the Department of Health as the lead department, rather than any other department. After all, this proposal were part of the act which was repealed before. So when the condition, a wise man really look at the material conditions of the country, there's no way after this COVID-19 we cannot consider such a very good legislation, proposal that I put forward before ourselves by the minister. In this context, I think I'll urge that every responsible honorable member to approve or consider the proposal to be taken forward, because it will help our country much more better way, and we should be preventative rather than running amok when we have a problem in the country. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I support this proposal. Thank you.
Honorable Minister, we would have to bring this meeting to a close at 10 o'clock. I will request that in your responses, you give me 5 minutes towards the end just to round up the meeting. You will recall when I made my opening remarks, as we are allowing members to start, I asked, why did you bring this to us? And I've just been checking with the legal team in the parliament that we normally don't get regulations as portfolio committees. We don't. So now it's even far from ever thinking that regulations will go to the house now, into the full house. But you would report, you would respond to those issues that have been raised by Honourable members. We now give you a chance to start.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to the Honourable members, and thanks for all your comments and some of the questions. I do appreciate the fact that the Honourable members have given themselves time to discuss this particular issue. The meeting was mainly to do a consultation to get your comments and your views on this matter. It is true that the National Disaster Act is in operation, and that in a few days' time, such a disaster act would be expiring, but it has been always renewed every month, and so it is not so much in the hands of the Department of Health as to whether the disaster situation has to be uplifted or not. It tends to be an issue that is considered by the various departments, the cabinet in general, and of course issues that are arising in the work of the National Coronavirus Council that will give us an indication as to what would be the best for the country. And therefore, the issue of the National Disaster Act I know that some of the members have been arguing we should have even taken the department, that we should have taken a decision on the and declaring a state of emergency and so on. So we do understand that there are all those different views. But because this matter is being discussed at this moment, and also we're looking through various avenues of what would be the best situation of managing the pandemic going forward. And of course, this issue is arising in that context. And it's arising in that context because we felt that the regulations that we are bringing for discussion, we just needed to bring the issue up with the portfolio committee, because the regulations actually existed. They were part of our regulations that were in place, and there was no problem whatsoever with them. And the basis of most of the regulations is on international health regulations, which are restrictions that get to be used by different countries to deal with the containment of notifiable medical conditions. Generally, when we deal with highly infectious diseases that spread pretty fast, and therefore there has to be urgent interventions to deal with those kinds of situations. At the start of the coronavirus pandemic, a number of countries were actually not even putting up restrictions coming from central government. They were just issued by the head of department, the director general, because there is a provision that allows for a quick action to deal with a situation where there is an outbreak. And those outbreaks, when you need to deal with them, you don't wait for a debate in parliament. You have to act on in the interest of the health of the people in that particular area. So I think we need to understand the regulations in that context and understand them in the context that they actually have been existing over years, and the fact that in the past few years there was an oversight on these regulations is something that needs to be corrected in any way. But effectively, if COVID-19 was not a global threat as it was, or it was something that was restricted to localized areas, it could have actually been managed without having to deal with the with the disaster, declaration of disaster, and all the issues that were associated. It's just that this one, it has taken a very unusual presentation throughout the whole country, the whole world. But there are many other conditions which will require that there should be interventions, probably by nature of those epidemics. It would probably only require circumscribed restrictions that are associated with various areas that are affected. It may not necessarily be a countrywide issue. But the regulations are empowering right across to be able to deal with the situation as it arises. But nothing stops us from raising the issue in Parliament if there's been restrictions put in place, that such restrictions in relation to notifiable medical conditions, that they should actually be discussed in Parliament, so that Parliament can ascertain that the members of Parliament are comfortable that the necessary oversight is being taken into account. So because of the fact that this matter is being discussed, we thought it would have been courtesy to bring the matter to the portfolio committee and not let everyone, as we discuss it, leave the portfolio committee behind. That was really the one main reason for that. Currently, a lot of discussions and consultations are going on about this matter, and there hasn't been a decision taken that the national disaster, that the declaration of a disaster should be uplifted or not. That situation, you know, is something that would have to be taken at the right level by cabinet. But it is much more useful to do so when we have actually had all the as much of the comments, particularly from the portfolio committee, and as it will be at this point, various departments, and including the state law advisor, which has actually been consulted in this matter before. So we felt therefore that it was quite important to look at it and discuss it at this point. So whatever decisions get taken, whether it continues or doesn't continue, at least the portfolio committee would have been consulted, and the question of what alternatives, what other issues need to be kept in mind, of course, arises in that context. There is no malice that should be construed in the discussion of the restrictions that are being proposed. The nature of notifiable medical conditions, particularly infectious conditions, those conditions do require various restrictions. And in the conduct of this pandemic, there was always going to be a possibility of, depending on how the infection was faring in the various areas, the possibility would have existed for localized restrictions. It's just that in our case, the spread of the infection moved very fast, and therefore some of the restrictions could not just be contained in one area. But certainly nothing says that in the future we may actually have the same kind of pattern. There might be a slightly different pattern that may not necessarily require the whole country to be under the same regulations or under the same restrictions. And therefore, it might be possible to impose the restrictions in particular area. This situation, we initially thought it could have arisen, for example, we discussed this much earlier on with the Premier and government in the Western Cape, that there may well have been a need to start putting up certain restrictions. But the fact that the situation just moved much further, it actually caused us to look at the whole country instead of just, you know, certain parts of the country, as it were. So the members should therefore understand that there was nothing wrong with the regulations being passed in the first instance, and that when we reinstate them, and we like them to be, the members to be familiar with the fact that they are being reintroduced, is nothing that is out of the ordinary. I think it's an important issue that it needs to be shared and discussed with the portfolio committee. As I've said, they are actually generally applicable in many countries, as it were. Now, the question of these regulations, they are actually not the same as the restrictions necessarily that would have been imposed through the National Disaster Act as such. These could be restrictions that allow us some of the basic things. Now, if you remove everything, if you were to remove everything around National Disaster Declaration, you would probably not have an instrument through which you could actually ask people to continue to use masks, to promote hand washing and hand sanitizing. You wouldn't be able to restrict the movement, the distancing, to promote distancing, social distancing. You would have challenges with the numbers of people who attend various gatherings, and you would need to be able to have a clear explanation as to why you would want people to do that. And under the circumstances, we're not all out of the woods yet. There are still certain things that we need to maintain. So, for example, when the the state of disaster is uplifted, whenever that will be, it would obviously mean that there has to be an instrument that will allow us to say, well, we still have to continue to use the mask. We have to continue to, you know, insist on numbers, that funerals have to be restricted to so many people, that gatherings have to be restricted. You can't have a full football stadium because now there's no more, we're no more under a disaster. It would send a very wrong message if we just left everything like that and never tried to actually use a legal instrument to remind people of the new normal that we are going to be expected to, you know, to live by. And I think we all must also understand that right now, level one, in terms of all the restrictions that we have, there's not much more of other restrictions that you can impose, that you can impose under the situation in which we are, because those decisions were taken in consideration on the progress of the disease as it is right now. However, if there is, for example, a need, let me just say, for argument's sake, we come into the third week of November, then we started shooting up the numbers, and they went up to, you know, a very huge number, and then we're seeing people being admitted in hospitals and so on and so on. You might find that these regulations might not be enough to manage that situation. We might actually need a national disaster a declaration again. So I think when we make a distinction between that disaster declaration and these regulations are really basically to encourage a particular conduct by society, and also ability for the environmental officers or the enforcement officers to be able to do inspections and still continue to encourage people to behave in a way that will avoid us getting further into the problems of the spread of the infection, particularly as we're waiting for more for vaccination. We don't want to argue. We think that South Africans have done a great job. The communities have responded. The health workers have responded, and you know, non-governmental organizations, business, government, all of us have tried our best. And so I think you know, we should just accept that we were able to do what we could do, and we must acknowledge that South Africans have tried their best under the circumstances. Now, with all of that, we then need to indicate that the manner in which we have to deal with the situation going forward, we still have to put a lot of surveillance into the system, and we've got a plan now to deal with surveillance, and that plan will allow us space to be able to notice when there's a new increase in particular areas, and it might be necessary that in those areas certain action needs to be taken. You need to be empowered to do that without having to impose a state of you know, disaster for that particular area, for the particular for the whole country. So this surveillance is going to be important as well, because that's the support we get from WHO to ensure that out of the situation which we are at, we need to be able to, you know, not to be taken by surprise by the surge. Some of the members have said we shouldn't do what the other people are doing in other countries. We actually didn't, but we took a lot of lessons from other countries. There are things that we have done here, which was really because we're taking South African conditions into account. but we have actually, the president has announced that we're opening almost all sectors of business. And so we did that under the state of disaster. Now, to think that, you know, you can have a health act that can be, you know, worse than a national disaster and impose a lockdown. The lockdowns were very extreme measures which have worked in many countries, and other countries are going back there, actually. If you look at the UK, where they are going back to restrictions, you look at Spain, they're going back to restrictions, you look at the US and so on. So we can't say to people that we may never get there, but you don't need to get there using the National Health Act, you know, on its own. It really is a multi-sectoral, multi-departmental, and involves various spheres and so on. So it does need quite a lot of discussion to be able to get there. So that would be my comment on the issue, as it were. Well, there are those who feel that you have to criticize government for the way we've handled this situation. I think that what should be important is to accept that we had to find a way of balancing the lives and the livelihoods. We had to actually open up various restrictions. And some of the members here were saying we are actually being unfair to our community, to our society in general, by opening up certain restrictions too early. We were actually prejudicing particularly communities who are in poor communities and people who are in informal settlements and so on. The truth of the matter was that those who were affected largely by unemployment, loss of jobs, loss of food security and so on, were actually those who are, you know, majority black and the poor, as it were. So to keep a balance has also been very, very important in this regard. And that balance is something that we must always consider. As we sit now, our major focus is to make sure that we get rid of the COVID-19, but at the same time, we must try and rebuild this economy. And we need to do that as much as fast as is possible. And that's why we've actually gone on to open the international travel, because tourism, business, travel, and investor movement, all of those are very, very important for South Africa, various sectors that we have to deal with. When we started opening up with the mines, the provinces such as Northwest, Limpopo, actually started shooting up their numbers at that point, but we couldn't say, you know, why are you bringing people back into the mines when in fact they are now, the numbers are increasing. We had to manage that whole situation as it was arising, because it was important to make sure that people have an income and at the same time we contain the spread of the infection. I think we've really tried our best as the country South Africa, but we must always say we must have adequate ammunition or tools or instruments to be able to respond if the situation changes. Right now, the numbers are showing a degree of stabilization, but at 2,000 in 24 hours up to 10,000 per week, that number is still very high. It's important for us to say we can't relax and we can't say have nothing. So if, for example, you wanted to remove the state of disaster, you must have some basic instrument that will be able to help us to manage and move on. But if the situation gotten so bad that you needed to take extra action, certainly nothing stops the return of the state of declaration of a disaster. But as I've said, that decision is not ours as we speak. It's just that we have to get into that conversation now together with the portfolio committee members and the various departments. We have to get into that conversation to say what else should we be doing as we go into the future. Then let me then say, Chairperson, that there are comments here about a government that has lost the trust of the people and those comments. I suppose that must be a specific issue that we're referring to, because the issue that's really been a major concern of late, one was the issue of the impact on the economy. The entire world has gone through this, exactly the same challenge where the economy is shrunk, the biggest economy, even China, in India, in the US, the economies have actually been badly hit because of the restrictions that were necessary to contain the infection. So when people are upset and frustrated because of it, I think we all must understand, because South Africans do have this challenge that the economy has not performed, and the president is going to be announcing in the next few days some measures to try and help to rebuild the economy. So we are responding to that issue on the basis that we do understand that any such concern is legitimate. The other issue that has raised concern, which we acknowledge, is the fact that there have been cases of corruption that have been reported, and those cases have been investigated, and we continue to investigate, and actions are being taken, mainly because our people are concerned about it. And of course, government cannot allow a situation where, in the face of such a serious threat to our lives, we then have people who are actually misusing the resources. So even that has actually been an important response from government. So when people have got challenges, they've got criticism because of those issues, I think that is actually understood and is acceptable. But we do need to think about how to manage beyond the state of a declaration of a state of emergency, whenever that situation will be arising. Then the other issues that relate to comments that get made by members here, I think we need to also accept that there's a whole range of inputs that come into for consideration by government. We would have various advisory committees, we've got various stakeholders that have to be consulted. And so you may not see your specific proposal in the actions of government. Maybe you won't even see it immediately. Maybe you won't even see it at all, but it depends on how all of these things have been put together and distilled for purposes of ensuring that we do the best and consider all the views that are being brought in by the various stakeholders. So the comments about the drafting, that there may be issues of drafting that you are concerned with, we will have a look at that, and certainly we believe that the state law advisor and our legal team will look out to those particular areas. My main issue is what's important is to not to be so negative and suspicious that you would even throw away an instrument that we need to manage the situation even outside COVID, because the outside COVID situation basically means you may have something that's a risk to the health of the population. There has to be ability to respond to that, and it is not meant to take away powers from any sphere of government. There's certainly a provision for a discussion with a consultation at intergovernmental level with provinces, with districts and other levels of government. So that is that is actually acceptable. But also, if there should be any need to hold the minister and the government accountable on this matter, there's plenty of room for that. I think we must not take the fact that this matter is arising right in the middle of COVID-19, when there have been lots of other challenges, that everything must therefore be seen as being suspicious, as it were. But having said so, Chairperson, I'd like to leave it at that and just say that we have noted all the comments. We just want to reassure the members that these regulations are not meant to increase the restrictions to worse than what you have seen during the state of disaster. They are basically preparing for a future where there may be need for a certain conduct to be maintained, but at the same time, without having to have a whole disaster being declared, as it were. So for that, we'll always need these regulations. And then you can then be specific as you go into details to say, insofar as COVID-19 is concerned, these are the things that are still important for us to, contain that, that infection. As long as we're able to explain it that way, I think members should be assured that we'll be open to a discussion about it. And if there's any need for us to discuss those issues in Parliament, then we need to do so. The regulations don't normally get to be taken to for rediscussion in Parliament, and in this case, the regulations are pre-existing regulations, are not new regulations that have not been there before. And as we said, we think that there was an issue of an oversight that was associated. If I can just hold the bat, Chairperson, seeing that you need some time as well. If you think there's anything I need to touch on, I'm prepared to do so. But thank you. Thank you very much to the members of the Portfolio Committee for all your comments and your suggestions. And we will continue to engage whenever the situation arises. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Minister, and your team. I just wanted to mention two things. Today I observed a long queue of South Africans who were waiting to receive this money that they get from the post office to assist them to cushion the poverty and the troubles that have been brought by COVID. I would be very circumspect to use that. I did talk to some of them, and I really got them very confidently saying this is going to really go a long way, and they are confident they will get it because other people yesterday got it. Now, I would be very circumspect to use that as a yardstick as of a satisfaction or dissatisfaction of South Africans in the whole country, because South Africa is a very large country. So if members would be very cautious to use an observation in certain parts of the country as a general general picture of what is happening in South Africa, which was some of the issues that were coming in from one or two members. Honorable members, I've enjoyed this participation in your debate. It's not different from the reflection that we see when we have the issue of the disaster being discussed in the country by political parties. Because there are political parties who are saying these regulations, these restrictions were too harsh to the economy of the country. And there are some of the political parties who have been saying this is too lenient to allow children to go back to school. Some of them were saying it was just opportune to get this lockdown started at this time because of what it has happened in the country. So, and others were saying it was unnecessary. So this, actually to find members with the varied responses even on this is not really alarming. It's a reflection of the political parties where we come from. I was just doing a count that a majority of the members here did say, we note these regulations, please go ahead with them and consult further. We are happy with them, and others did not. So as Minister has indicated, it was a matter of consultation with us as he considers and he continues to consult with other leaders. And consultations with us on regulations is not something that needs us to take to the House. Minister, you don't have to even mention it yourself. It's the WHO that has even commended you for the strides that you have done in the country. You could have done better, but we are satisfied with what we see. And people all over, including the World Health Organization, has indicated and given you a commendation for the work well done. In doing such a good work, there could have been some issues where somebody might see something that was not well done. We accept that and let's move on. But overall, we would then say you did mention this to us, and the members might have had different views, and we accept that it was not actually unexpected, at least when we are dealing with these issues. But we'll close it at that, honorable members, and then saying the meeting also had different views on this matter, but it was regulations in any event that the minister was consulting us on, and the majority of the members accepted the input that was provided by the minister and his team. Thank you very much, honorable members. The meeting is adjourned. And thanks, Minister, and your team. The meeting is adjourned. Honorable members, thank you. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you. Members, thank you very much. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Molo Mashengwa.
Molo.